The Founding Fathers, American Revolution, our Constitution, our history, America. Thanks so much for tuning in as we discuss the people, places, events, and battles that turned 13 separate colonies into the greatest nation on earth, the United States.
Welcome back, Patriots. I'm your host, Ron Kern, and I want to thank you for allowing me to share my passion for the American Revolution and our country's history with you. In this bonus episode, we're going to be talking about a man that had a very eventful life, filled with major victories and importance to the revolution, and events would still unfold even after his death. He also had, well, a not-so-great moment that we're going to talk about, too. I'm, of course, speaking about John Paul Jones, commonly referred to as the father of the American Navy. Big shout out and thanks again to Shane, who is a sergeant in the 2nd Continental Marines, who requested that John Paul Jones be the topic of this bonus episode. Thank you so much for your service, Shane, and I really appreciate sincerely your service to our country. With that, let's get started on this bonus episode, the show's 38th episode, and learn more about John Paul Jones. John Paul Jones was one of the greatest naval war heroes in American history. His exploits throughout history, specifically during the American Revolutionary War, led Jones to become friends with many political elites and founding fathers, including Benjamin Franklin. His accomplishments, circle of friends, and bravery on the sea earned him an international reputation as the father of the American Navy. Jones was born on July 6th in 1747 as John Paul. He was born on the southwest coast of Scotland. By the age of 12, he officially began his maritime career when he became a ship's mate aboard a ship that was named Friendship. That's a lot of ships. Things were different back then. Like, can you imagine at age 12 or a 12-year-old now, you know, climbing aboard a ship and learning and working on the ship? It's insane. But he did, and he also spent his teenage years sailing across the Atlantic Ocean, and he worked on a variety of vessels, including merchant ships and also slave ships. He was so interested and invested in learning all he could about sailing ships, defense, offense. He took full advantage of every opportunity, and he soaked up a tremendous amount of knowledge, and more importantly, actual experience aboard a ship. Although he and the ship's owners made a fortune running slave ships, he believed that anyone in bondage was not okay with him, and he disagreed with slavery. He believed this so much that he actually stopped working on slave ships, even though that dropped his income tremendously. Standing up for his morality actually ended up benefiting him and his career. Through a course of events, while stepping away from the slave trade in 1768, he joined another non-slave ship. The first mate, along with the captain of this ship, died of malaria. This is the point in his life when John Paul stepped up and took control of the ship and managed to navigate it safely back to Scotland, where its owners were eagerly waiting and willing to reward the very young sailor. He was given command of the ship. Ironically, the ship's name was John, J-O-N, and he completed two voyages for its owner. On the second voyage, around 1770, things took a turn for the worse. One of the sailors attempted a mutiny after demanding early wages. He wanted to get paid early, right? So Jones had his crewmen tie him to the mast, and he was flogged, beaten with a whip. This really wasn't an unheard-of method to keep discipline on a ship, especially mutiny. But this guy actually ended up dying from his wounds, which was actually rare. This not only led Jones to start having a bad reputation, but criminal charges were issued, and he was arrested once he landed in Scotland. He was imprisoned, and before John Paul could post bail, The governor encouraged him to leave the area immediately, which is exactly what he did. It's not really known specifically why the governor allowed this or why he seemed to side with John Paul, but he did in fact leave Scotland and ended up commanding a ship named Betsy. He captained this ship for a year and a half before another issue involving pay came from another crew member. This man was just short of mutiny and ended up with John Paul killing him with his sword. Now, he understood how the Admiral Courts worked, and he was facing very serious charges. So he reached out to someone that he thought could help and would help. That person was Benjamin Franklin. He explained to Franklin that the killing was actually in self-defense, and this is the point in John Paul's life that he actually took the surname Jones and added it as his last name. He didn't really want to be found, right? So he added Jones. I guess Jones was as common back then as it is here in the States today. So that is the point where now he is now known as John Paul Jones. He departed for the American colonies and landed at an estate in Fredericksburg, Virginia, which his brother actually owned. Now, his brother had recently passed away, and his brother, having no wife, children, or immediate family, the newly named John Paul Jones was able to take ownership of the entire estate. While he was in the colonies, he began taking quite a liking to its city, the people, and the landscape. And he became so fond of the colonies, he was ready to go up against the British Empire and fight on the colonists' behalf. In 1775, Jones left Virginia and headed to Philadelphia, where he volunteered for the very, very new Continental Navy. In fact, the Navy was so new that finding a captain, let alone any that had any experience, was in very high demand. So with his letters of endorsement from Benjamin Franklin and, now, Richard Henry Lee, he was given the rank of first lieutenant of a 24-gun frigate named USS Alfred. On December 7th in 1775, he began sailing the ship up and down the coast of all 13 colonies. In February of 1776, he became the first person to hoist the first U.S. ensign over a naval vessel. The ship Alfred had one goal, and that was to cause havoc, plunder, and cause any damage he could to any British ship that he came across. Now, this would do a couple of things. First, it's going to disrupt British ships from resupplying their troops, and it also let the British fleet know that coming and going is not going to be as easy as it had been in the past. After successfully causing many disruptions to the British ships, he was ordered to sail to Nassau for supplies. He returned to the colonies and was now given command of the USS Providence. You may have heard Providence before in some of my podcasts or in your own reading, but I'll add it here that Providence was the term used by many of the time, meaning God or referring to God. And in my research, it looks like, I think, that God and Providence can easily be interchanged, but yet hold the same exact meaning. The Providence had a similar task and a goal of causing issues with British ships. Basically, you want to cause issues and havoc and fear, you call John Paul Jones, and that's what he did. So this actually may be one of the most successful times on the sea, because in a matter of only a month and a half, he captured 16 British ships. Now, at the time, that was completely unheard of, and most thought it was impossible. In fact, many thought it wasn't true. But it was, in fact, true. With this ship and his men, and John Paul Jones at the helm, he made it possible, and it's considered a top-level accomplishment, and certainly the biggest success story of the new Continental Navy to that point. He wasn't done, though, because on November 2nd in 1776, Jones and the Providence went on a full assault that destroyed a large portion of the British fleet. The assault took place on the Isle Royale and even managed to free many Americans that were being held as prisoners of war. It appeared that Jones and his crew were virtually unstoppable. Victory after victory, he got more popular, he was more respected, and in many cases, revered. It's no wonder he is known as the father of the American Navy. Now, all of this success gave him command of a 18-gun frigate called Ranger. He and the Ranger sailed to France and landed in Paris. He was admired by the city, and meeting up with Benjamin Franklin, the most famous American, certainly didn't hurt either. Once France officially declared that they're going to join the war on the colony side, Jones said he would continue his fight against the British. At night, he attacked the British town of Whitehaven and, along with 16 of his crew, rowed to shore, set fire to the fleet of merchant and warships that were tied in port. He destroyed them all. Then, this is crazy, then they went up the coast and they were going to kidnap the Earl of Selkirk, which he had hoped would lead to a very large ransom. But when they arrived, the Earl was not home. In fact, he wasn't in the area at all. So what did he do? He and his men had tea in his home with the Earl's family. I just think that's it's a little funny, but it's also provides a bit of insight into this guy's mindset. I mean, he goes there, he burns everything, then he's going to kidnap the Earl. But instead, he ends up sitting down with the family and having tea. He did not harm the family. He didn't burn or destroy any of anything that they owned, which I think would have been done without thought. Usually, you're going to destroy what you come across. That's in possession of the enemy, right? But he didn't. News of Jones' victories at sea and being revered by France and all of his other actions were being heard now worldwide at this point. He returned to France and was given command of the largest ship he had been in charge of ever before, a 42-gun frigate. Jones renamed it to the Bonhomme Richard. This name was chosen in honor of Benjamin Franklin, which related to the Poor Richard's Almanac that Franklin was so popular for. The name of the ship would become very famous. So he and this ship came upon a fleet of nearly 40 British merchant ships. These ships, however, weren't traveling alone, and they were being escorted or protected by two warships. And they were big. One was a 44-gun frigate named Serapis, and the other was a 28-gun frigate named Countess of Scarborough. These were very powerful and well-equipped vessels.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Not being deterred, the Serapis and Bonhomme Richard were headed right towards each other. Their soon-to-be battle would go down as one of the most intense, fierce, and brutal sea battles up to that point. Cannonballs tore through Jones's ship, and likewise the cannonade was done back to the Serapis, but it was a little too late, as the Richard became so damaged that it couldn't hardly move, making it virtually a sitting duck. The Serapis continued firing non-stop, which destroyed now the mast, eventually leading to the evacuation of the crew. So these two ships were so close that they communicated back and forth to each other just by simply yelling. And legend has it that the commander of the Serapis, Captain Pearson, yelled over and asked Jones if he was ready to surrender. Jones looked at both ships and looked at his and replied with the famous line, quote, "I have not yet begun to fight." Whether or not this was actually said is still debated today, but I'd like to think he said something like that, because after all, he had never surrendered, he had countless victories up to that point, and for him to say, you know what, sure, I'll give up, it just doesn't make sense and it doesn't fit his previous choices. Jones then used his ship, as crippled as it was, to ram the Serapis, which now made the two mammoth-sized ships interlocked. Jones' crew then threw hooks over the Serapis, and both crews engaged in intense combat. Men from Jones' ship was now on the enemy ship. Muskets were being fired, swords were flying, men killing men, and a lot of yelling. It was pure chaos. They were also using hand grenades that, at this close range, can cause a lot of damage, as you can imagine. Finally, the top deck of the Serapis was destroyed, falling on many of the British crew, causing mass casualties. Jones and his men never allowed anyone from the Serapis to step foot on the Bornholm Richard. This battle went on for about 4 hours, and exact numbers aren't known. It's estimated that about 50% of each crew were killed. Jones and his men eventually captured the Serapis, taking it under their full control. This battle would be called the Battle of Flamborough Head and would help cement France joining forces with the colonies. The Bornholm Richard was on fire, leaking, and heavily damaged, and it would sink 36 hours later. Jones and his crew sailed the captured Serapis back to the Dutch United Province for repairs. I did see in some of my research that I believe they found the ship. I don't know if they've actually lifted it to the surface or what they've done, but at least they know where it is, so that's kind of cool. So once he got back in France, Jones was knighted by King Louis, was given a gold-plated sword, and also a military merit. He was also issued a Medal of Valor by the United States in 1787. There wasn't much going on in 1787 in regards to battles, so Jones' participation with the United States Navy kind of just came to an end. So in April of that year, he sailed to and began service for Empress Catherine II of Russia. He was appointed as Vice Admiral and now commanded a 24-gun flagship named Vladimir. As he did for the Continental Navy, his battles and victories continued. He was issued countless more medals, merits, and commendations. Now, I want to let you guys know that the next portion of this podcast, I'm going to be discussing a couple topics that aren't the best heard by young ears. So it's mature in its nature. So it's not like super graphic, but certainly not topics for minors. So if you have young listeners, please hit pause now and take appropriate measures. In April of 1789, Jones was charged with the rape of a 10-year-old girl, and her name was Katerina Stepanova. In court, Stepanova testified that she was summoned to his house to deliver butter, but once she arrived, Jones punched her in the face, gagged her, and then raped her. A surgeon and midwife that examined her substantiated her physical and sexual injuries were, in fact, in alignment with her story. This is where one might consider this to be a false story, trying to take down such a highly popular man, an adored and exceedingly highly decorated naval commander, receiving numerous accolades, not from one or two, but now three countries. I was hoping this was the case, but after reading the transcripts and the testimony from Jones himself, it gave me a little bit of a pause here. So Jones says that he had paid her for sex many times before, but claims she was a lot older than 10 years old. The girl's father would testify in court that she was in fact 12 years old. Now later on during this trial, Jones would change his story and deny any wrongdoing, claiming that the girl's mother was trying to make money from such a prominent man. Jones continued to collect evidence for his defense, proving that her mother had left her husband, lived in a brothel, and was quite promiscuous herself. In short, he was given 2 years abroad, meaning that basically he was free to go. Both the French and America were doing all they could to persuade Empress Catherine as well, which likely didn't hurt. In my personal opinion, why on earth would you change your testimony if you were actually innocent? Even if the rape was in fact false, the fact that you admit having sexual relationship with a 10 or 12-year-old, it doesn't bode well. And likely, I'm sure, all of my listeners are thinking the same thing. So he retired in 1790. But 2 years later, he was appointed by the United States, a position that he was going to be able to work on the release of U.S. prisoners of war. Before he could commence this new job, he died and was found in his Paris apartment, lying face down on his bed. He died on July 18th, 1792, at the young age of 45. The cause of death was interstitial nephritis, which is the inflammation of the kidney and the kidney area. One would think this is where his story ends, but it doesn't. Even in death, his story continues. He was buried in Paris at the Saint Louis Cemetery, which belonged to the French royal family. But in 1905, his body was exhumed and identified by the U.S. ambassador to France, Horace Porter. Porter had been searching for over 6 years to locate his grave, as either the headstone was lost or he never had one to begin with. His body had been stored in alcohol and inside a lead coffin, in a sense, mummifying him. This was done in part to make it easier for the United States should they ever want to identify him later. The mummified body of Jones was compared to the bust completed by Houdon, and the cause of death also matched his body. I have both the bust of Jones and the photo of his exhumed body in the show notes for this episode. It is a bit eerie to look at, but when you compare it to the bust and paintings, it's pretty obvious, at least to me, that it is in fact him. It's also a pretty good compliment to the painter who created the portraits, because they were pretty spot on. I have all of that in the show notes. So once they confirmed it was him, his body was brought back to the United States, and he is now buried at the United States Naval Academy, which is located in Annapolis, Maryland. I want to end this show with some little known or interesting facts about John Paul Jones. He was born the fourth child out of seven, and only one of two that lived to adulthood. As I mentioned earlier, he was named John Paul, but added Jones to help not be found by authorities. He was the first naval officer to receive a gold medal from the Continental Congress, and Jones also had a personal seal that featured a skull and crossbones. It also had the saying, "Thus die tyrants," which symbolized his defiance of tyranny and oppression. Jones is credited with designing the first ever Grand Union flag, also known as the Continental Colors. Now, this flag was a precursor to the Stars and Stripes of our current U.S. flag. There was only one film made about his life that I could find, which was done in 1959, called John Paul Jones. Robert Stack and Charles Coburn star in it. And it apparently didn't receive much press or acclaim. They do say it's a very accurate depiction of his life. I definitely want to watch it. I found part one on YouTube, but not part two, so that really isn't going to help. But it does appear, if you want to watch it, you can watch it on Roku, or it says it's available on Amazon Prime. I have not verified that, but check those two out if you want to watch it. I hope that this bonus episode was satisfactory for you, Shane, since Shane is the one that requested the topic. But if you have a person or subject matter that you'd like me to cover in a future bonus episode, please send me an email. If you could do me a favor and do a review of my podcast, because the more reviews it receives, the easier it is for people to find. If you want to help out financially, you can do that too. Just go to patriotpowerpodcast.com and click on Support Podcasts. Lastly, check out the show notes for this episode and enjoy the videos, links, book recommendations, all neatly organized, full of amazing resources prepared just for you. Again, every single episode has show notes, except for the Patriot Power file. So check it out, patriotpowerpodcast.com, and appreciate you tuning in. And again, thanks, Shane, for this recommendation.
Thanks for listening, and hope that you tune in next time with us here at the Patriot Power Podcast. Make sure that you hit subscribe so you'll get notified when our new episodes are available for you. And we hope that you check out our websites, which include our show notes, links, documents, and more at patriotpowerpodcast.com or ilovegeorgewashington.com. Until next time, hope that you and your family have a blessed week. And remember, be safe and tell a veteran thanks for their service.